Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call on Friday, the 11th of March, 2022. We are now 15 days into what I think is a new world in many ways, with the war raging in Ukraine and unprecedented level of sanction against Russia. A lot of things are being redrawn and reshaped across the world. And just a quick, interesting piece of information. So the Russia, are not any longer getting any technical supplies from the US and Europe, for instance, spare parts for airplanes. So very soon, a lot of airplanes won't be able to fly because you're basically running out of possibilities to maintain your existing fleet. They have reached out to the Chinese because they still have access to Boeing and Airbus spare parts, and the Chinese actually refused. So it shows you that even the Chinese are the Chinese government is really, really walking on a fine balance here, to trying to be neutral in all of this, but also still honor the sanctions. And talking about China, because Chinese equities took I think center stage attention yesterday. So we had the SEC highlighting that this U.S. audit demand that was basically part of a bill that was the final thing that Donald Trump signed before he left the White House. Is enforcing this new laws on Chinese listed companies in U.S. where the U.S. wants a much more thorough audit and can be audited by U.S. companies if something is not clear, something that we have been arguing for years when I've talked to clients will never be accepted by Beijing, because they see it as a national security issue, and no U.S. U.S. audit firm is ever going to be able to do that against a Chinese company. So we basically have 270 ADRs, Chinese companies listed in the U.S. that are at risk, and specifically there are five companies mentioned yesterday's big really names, maybe except for Baijin, for those that knows biotechnology companies. And it really soured the sentiment on Chinese equities, and the Hang Seng tech futures, which I've put in here on slide two, they were down 5% and even more at the lows. And it just, I have this feeling also the Norwegian wealth fund that was exiting a lot of their shares in one of the big sports retailers the other day in China. I mean, you just sense that there is some nervousness among institutional investors in the developed world. How should we go about Chinese equities, and to what extent, and which companies maybe have a lot of ties to Russian companies, etc. So this is going to be very interesting to follow in the months ahead. And as I said in my equity webinar yesterday, I remain pretty cautious on Chinese equities. There's a lot of issues still in the Chinese economy. We maintain our defensive view. Just quickly before we go to you and bring you into the conversation, Ole, you could see as well here on slide two that the theme baskets were back to normal, quote unquote, with your bubble stocks and e-commerce stocks being the worst, and commodity sector, batteries, logistics, and defense stocks doing quite well. And then we need to talk about CPI and interest rates. But first, Ole, I mean, we had the ECB turning very hawkish yesterday. I would say, a bad reaction in the euro. It fell against the dollar despite a hawkish turn, and it's continuing here in the early session. But my main takeaway before I leave your comments, we go to your comments, is that insert we put here on slide three. I mean, to me, it just seems so ridiculous that the ECB really believes that inflation will come back to 2.1%. I have zero trust in inflation forecasts from central banks, because they have been horribly wrong for the past 2 years, as their econometric models are not able to capture the current inflation dynamics. So, but Ole, what do you think about the ECB, but also the CPI report in the US and dollar yen?
Yeah, well, we saw the first of all, the ECB. You're absolutely right. For 2.1%, when we are facing an energy crisis in Europe with prices, I don't know how many fold higher than what we are used to. That is just raising input costs and raising inflation. And this is it would be fantastic. It was true, but unfortunately, I don't think we are going to look further, quite a bit into the distance, to find 2.1% annual inflation in Europe. It was also highlighted by the CPI in the US, 7.9% year on year, as expected, but just continuing the trend higher that we're seeing now for a number of months. On slide four, I put in the CPI developments, and also just highlighting where the market, the US market, is trading inflation expectations to 2, 5, and 10 year out. And then you can see they've been rising recently, but still obviously not anywhere near where current levels are. So still the expectation that we will see inflation eventually start to turn lower. But in the short term, with what's been going on now for the past 2 weeks, that turn in terms of inflation may be a bit further out in the future. And that also has raised the prospects for rate hike. Well, the rate hike expectation has always been there for next week when the FOMC meets. But I think the data and what we've seen recently just once again raising the some speculation that we may see a 50 basis points increase next week. And I think that's probably also one of the reason why I just put in gold here, that we've seen a correction in gold from after almost touching the record high from 2020. We have drifted lower. We're holding above support around that 1960 level, but the market will be somewhat nervous ahead of that meeting. However, we have seen in the past that the beginning of a rate hike cycle quite often in gold has signaled a period of strength. So we'll see what happens next week. But it has been a phenomenal couple of weeks for the commodity sector. Just some upheaval all over the place. We are just settling down a little bit as we head towards the weekend. We're actually at this point seeing the first weekly drop in the commodity sector. If you look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index, the first weekly drop since December. Some weakness coming in, but that's just coming on after those phenomenal gains we saw last week, and even at the start of the week. It's getting a bit long, but I just want to touch base on one thing, and that's the nickel. I put in the gray. You can see on the performance table in slide five, the nickel is still showing it's up more than 60%, which is obviously not the case. But the nickel has been paused for trading since Tuesday. The ramification of cancelling a market and cancelling trades on a day where the market jumps more than $50,000 a ton is just immense. And the LME has announced that they will not open until next week sometime, perhaps even later. They're just still trying to sort out the mess and clear out the rubble. What we know is that it was done in order to ensure to prevent defaults in the market, especially one big Chinese whale that was holding a massive big short. We can see on the chart down on the right hand side that if we based LME nickel on the back of what's been going on in Shanghai over the past few days, where prices have actually come down, we are looking at a potential 40 to 50% lower opening on nickel at when they do open next week. So that will again trigger a lot of discontent. Imagine being long and you haven't gotten any opportunity of getting out, and you'll be facing a market opening 40-50% lower. So a story that will rumble on for some time.
Well, Ole, I mean, I've been thinking about it because I read this morning that you have seasoned commodity hedge funds that have been trading on the LME for 30 years, and there are comments out in the this morning in the FT and Bloomberg that I'm quitting all my positions. I'm exiting this. It's outrageous what have happened, and I have no trust in LME any longer, etc. I'm just wondering whether, because as we talked about at the office the other day, you had the tin crisis back in the mid 80s, where you had a similar situation, and tin futures never got back on its foot and trading again on the LME, and now we have the nickel debacle. I'm just wondering, could this be the demise of LME? Could we move to a more normal monthly futures commodity contracts as you have in a lot of other commodities, or what do you think about this whole thing?
Well, I traded LME metals for a number of years when I worked for a hedge fund back in my London days, and it has always been a horrible market to trade, in the sense that that not only do you have to in normal futures market, you have a fixed expiry date. You don't have that. The LME is operating in the sense that it's primarily geared towards consumer or producers and consumers, so you can settle. You can basically fine-tune your trade to the exact the date that you need it. But the problem with that is that you are trading on a 3 months rolling basis on every day. So if you bought a position today and you're selling it out tomorrow, then you not only you have to trade the prevailing 3 months date, you then have to adjust the price back to your original value date or your original expiry date. This is just creating a market which is well, obviously full of opportunities for market makers, but just very difficult to settle, very difficult to administrate. The rest of the world is basically looking have fixed expiry contracts, fixed months expiry contracts, basically meaning that most of the you have all the interests concentrated in one particular contract at any given time, and that just creates a bigger depth of liquidity, and you avoid some of these volatility and the scenarios and delivery scenarios that we sometimes find in the LME. So we'll see whether it is the time for a change, but clearly when you may also consider having some kind of stops limits in the market, daily gap limits, where you simply have to stop trades and just let the market calm down and see who's holding what, and maybe get margins sorted out and so on. But this is the move last week. There's a lot of speculation as well, and we're not going to get into that. But the LME is owned by the Hong Kong Exchange, so let us leave it there.
Okay, but it's fascinating stories about the LME, and it is. We are talking a lot about commodities these days. We have to admit, and it's not the most traded asset class among our clients, but it's definitely an asset class that have picked up interest among our clients a lot. And Ole, before we round off with macro and the earnings calendar, we need to do a round trip around the oil market, right? Because there was a big move yesterday, and specifically in the last couple of days, there have been big moves in sulfur gas oil in New York.
That's actually in London, but the equivalent in New York is also having a rough ride. We all know that we've all been speculating at what level are we going to see demand destruction kicks in. We're keeping an eye on oil price because obviously oil is the input to all the refined products that we are with that eventually will have an impact, be impacted by high prices. So oil went to 140 and all the way, and then had the biggest 1 week drop or biggest 1 week range in history this week. We're trading around the 110 11 mark today, but the as you mentioned, Peter, the impact is really being felt in some of the products. And especially diesel, considering how much we in Europe we import from Russia, this was really where the epicenter of the panic this week. We have seen diesel prices suddenly at the pump being more expensive than gasoline in Denmark. I think that's the first time in almost a decade that happened. But then I was on a Danish radio program invited yesterday just to talk, because again, we talk about this demand destruction, and this is really it is starting to happen already. Yesterday was basically the Danish Fishery Association basically saying that they're starting to basically not leave the harbor because diesel is just simply too expensive for them to actually make any money on fishing. And this is obviously not the only sector where these prices are having an impact. So the longer these diesel prices remain at these levels, we will see more and more stories like that. And that is eventually what will lead to lower demand and then also a more stable market through a more balanced market. So it just shows the upheavals that we've been through this week. And is it over? Probably not. We need a peace deal for that to happen. The longer Russian oil is being regarded as toxic by many buyers around the world, the longer this process will take.
Yeah, it is indeed a brave new world, if we can borrow that that headline from Huxley, the great author. But let's turn to slide 7, the earnings watch. So there's not a lot of earnings today. There's a lot of Strategica and AIA Group, so not really particularly interesting. But next week, I have highlighted four names at least. So you have Volkswagen on Tuesday, Inditex on Wednesday, Lennar on Wednesday, and FedEx. FedEx is pretty much given why it's important, right? It's one of the largest logistics companies in the world. Inditex on Wednesday is the parent company of Zara. So fashion retailing, always interesting to get a little bit temperature on the consumer. And then we have Lennar, which is in the building construction of houses in the US, the building permits and housing starts, which will be released for February, if I'm not mistaken. We'll talk about that in the macro calendar in a short while. That's coming out at this in the same week as Lennar, and there is really an upward pressure on building starts and permits in the US, suggesting a very strong housing market. So we'll be watching that. And then Volkswagen, I think, is the most fascinating story. So we have in 1 year we have come from this new, you know, the rising phoenix, the new CEO that likes to be seen to hold hands with Elon Musk, and you know, he charging ahead with the, you know, electrical vehicles. I think he's right in his strategy. I think this is a CEO that is very not a typical German in the sense that he has bravado. He's a big bold plans for Volkswagen. I think it's exactly the right thing, but it's just right now Volkswagen have gone from, you know, high spirit about the future to just crisis management after crisis management. And right now Volkswagen is just pressured a lot on rising input costs, and you know, they're dealing with labor unions. There's internal friction between the electrical and the ICE divisions, and we talked about it on the podcast, I think it was last week, that Ford announced that they're going to spin off their electrical vehicle unit in a separate business. And I've argued for a long time that I think all the car makers should do that, including Volkswagen. And then, as you can see, Volkswagen have been hit extremely hard from the war in Ukraine, and partly because they're getting a lot of critical auto supplies from Ukraine. So they have halted production lines in some of their key factories here in Europe because of the war. So this is a story we'll be following on Tuesday. And now to the macro calendar, before we wrap things up, not a particularly interesting day today, maybe except for the Michigan preliminary sentiment on consumers in the US. That's later today at 1500 GMT. But otherwise, next week, there are three central bank decisions. So we have the very, very important FOMC rate decision on Wednesday, the Bank of England rate decision on Thursday that are expected to hike rates. And then you have Bank of Japan, which is still very much being passive here. But otherwise, are there anything you want to highlight, Ole, on the calendar for next week?
No, absolutely. It's going to be FOMC rate decisions, and hopefully for at least for a little while we can return just towards financial developments instead of geopolitical. But unfortunately, we probably won't. But it will be a key focal point next week.
All right. I think that's a wrap. And well, thank you for listening to Ole and myself. And we wish you a very, very great weekend, and stay safe out there. And we'll be back on Monday, same time and place. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.